So last week, I was very inconveniently absent for the launch of the first beta of Android Q. I was on vacation. You know, you got to take a vacation sometime. And I guess it just, I don't know, I couldn't work around the fact that it was landing that week. And my wife was off and, you know, you can't tell your wife no to a spring break trip to the Grand Canyon and Zion National Park, even if it means Android Q is launching. So,
okay, here's a question for you. Would you rather miss
last week, for sure. And if my wife's spring break, and she works in a school, so that's what I mean by her spring break. If she had had it this week, I would have been very disappointed because I definitely would not want it to have skipped the Stadia launch for the Grand Canyon. That's how awesome Stadia was. I'm just kidding. I'm totally being facetious, but at the same time, I'm not, because it was pretty cool. And but I guess before we get to Stadia, and that's kind of like, I don't know, the freshest on our minds, but I feel like it's also the coolest thing that we have to talk about today, and probably the coolest thing that Google's done since, what, Made by Google last year? Or maybe even more than that, if you considered last year's hardware event boring, which many did. But yeah, so let's talk about Android Q first, which I'm very much unqualified to talk about because I barely followed it, because whenever you're standing in front of the Grand Canyon, the last thing you want to do is read tweets about Android Q features. I don't know. Can you blame me?
So first of all, I would have probably, if I were in your shoes, there's a high chance I would have installed the OTA while I was on vacation.
I would have. I was tempted but I decided that living life was more important for that very short time.
Good man. So yeah, the fact that you can install an OTA on the first preview is notable. Google this year, instead of starting with a developer preview and then 2 months later going to a beta at I/O, out of the gate, Android Q was in beta quality, in beta status, and it definitely, the quality, the stability of the operating system in my mind reflects that. I haven't had notable crashes. I haven't had weird bugs, graphical errors compared to past years. So Q is very much like the first Android Pie beta last year. And that being said, most people still shouldn't install it, because while Google Pay does work, surprisingly, this time around, It's you don't want to install beta software on your daily driver. But yeah, Android Q in a lot of ways is focused on under the hood performance and new features for developers. We are still on beta 1, which means that all the new Pixel launcher features or the experience changes will likely not come until beta 3 at I/O, with Google this year switching to a new schedule where there will be a new beta in April. So in total, there will be 6 beta releases before the final release in Q3.
Yeah, but at the same time, like you said, a lot of these first betas, and it goes back to dev previews with the last couple of years. First of all, actually, I want to talk about how I really appreciate that Google this year decided to kind of streamline the whole branding naming thing, and they're just doing betas now, because having dev preview X come out at the same time as beta Y did not make any sense. It was very confusing to say, you know, this is dev preview 4, but it's beta 3. You know, it's like, that was just not good branding. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that they simplified this, because it seems like a no-brainer, and especially since the actual use case and the purpose of betas versus dev previews is Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
effectively zero.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. But I guess what you were saying was, you know, a lot of these kind of user facing features and upgrades are not here, but at the same time, they kind of are. They're just not enabled. And that's what we've seen happen this year is that a lot of these kind of features are starting to pop up. We saw that they're working on some changes to the gesture nav, which if you remember last year, the gesture nav did not come until, like you mentioned, the beta that launched at I.O. And apparently they're working on some changes to the gesture nav this mm-hmm. year, which probably won't come until the beta at I.O. But we did get to see kind of some in the works demo version of it. And we also got to see other in the works demo-y versions of other kind of UI or user facing changes, including one that I'm really happy about, which is this really sleek looking always on display clock that's text only. I really like that. That's definitely not something that I think Google wanted to be public until I/O, but here it is.
Yeah, that and new gesture navigation are definitely applause lines on the big stage. Like something as simple as being able to customize your clock, again, in Android, because Google used to have lock screen widgets around the KitKat and Lollipop era, but those were removed pretty early on. But yeah. That should be like a big attention.
Another really interesting one that has come out of this kind of Android Q enabling category of features is this really interesting chat head bubbles notification system. And we heard a little bit. I don't know if we mentioned this on the show before. I think we did, but we heard a little bit about a weird bubble based notification system that is not this, but is kind of similar to this. What we heard was there was kind of like notification, the actual notification UI in Android was basically being redesigned to recategorize notifications by app, to where you could tap on the different app icons basically to pull up the different notifications, which is not this, but it's kind of an interesting change that we've heard that Google's working on that this, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of this. What do you think about this?
So chat heads, popularized by Facebook probably and their Facebook phone. It's in Android, in terms of the popularity of chat heads, I think has somewhat gone down in recent years. And personally speaking, I think the default action with chat bubbles is to swipe them away because they're so annoying, they're intrusive that you just maybe for some people they just want to delete them, and that of course is bad for your actual notification experience. But yeah, this is new. I don't know how to describe it. I don't think it really matches. It's really in line with what Google's design direction going forward. Like the idea of overlaying a UI element over others is, I think this, it carries some inherent confusion to it in terms of you're mixing up elements. You might be covering, you're definitely going to cover things in the UI, even if you put it in the corners. So I don't know if this is something that's going to, I personally doubt that we're ever going to see this implementation of chat bubbles as notifications in a final release of Android. Well, at least not this year, maybe. But it doesn't seem very, it doesn't seem like the design direction.
I'm not so sure. First of all, we know for the last, however many major versions of Android, there have been notification overhauls / changes / revamps going back many, many years. Yes. And so it absolutely wouldn't be surprising for new notification system or major changes to notifications or whatever to be a headlining feature with Android Q, in my opinion, at least. Because it is an area I think that is just inherently bad. I think notifications on Android and iPhone, both, iOS, both, like they just aren't very useful, and they require a lot of manual curation. And not that this chat bubble system in particular fixes all the problems with notifications, but I just feel like notifications have a lot of issues that are waiting to be solved. And I mean, one of them is, I think we've talked about this on the show before, is just this anxiety that's tied to, you know, managing them and receiving them and sure, stuff like
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that I'm not saying at all that this is the solution or a solution to the many problems with notifications, but I do think notifications in general are kind of just a mess right now. And I think most people that don't manage the apps that are notifying them, that don't use the granular controls for the different kinds of notifications they're getting from different apps, which I think the data would show, I'm not sure, but I would guess the data would show that people basically do no management of notifications. They get pop-ups saying, this app would like to show send you notifications, no. And they just say yes to everything, and then they just have, you know, a mess of notifications on their phone all day, every day. I think that's pretty much most people's experience. And I think that can be fixed. I think that can be improved in one way or another. I really like what Android Pi has been doing, where, you know, it sends you notification. It sees that you're swiping it out away all the time, and it says, you know, do you want to keep receiving these notifications? It just knows that this particular notification, you're never actually interacting with it. So it would make sense that, you know, it would offer to no longer send you them. However, I will say with that feature, it's been an interesting thing for me, because like, it's helpful in a sense, because if you actually take the time to stop and think, you know, do I actually want to continue receiving these notifications, then it does make that easier. You know, it's like telling that pop-up, no, I don't want to receive these anymore, is way easier than digging into the settings menus and finding a way to turn it off, doing that manually. But on the other hand, I've just been just as annoyed with those notifications as I have been with the notifications themselves, because in that moment, I don't want to stop and think about whether or not I don't want to stop and think about that decision.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to clear stuff. I just want to get rid of stuff. I don't want to think about it. You know, I don't want to think about whether or not I want to keep getting those notifications, and I don't want to have to be making a decision in that moment. So I don't think that's the solution either. At least it hasn't been for me, on my Pixel. It just isn't, I don't know, hasn't been effective. I just tend to ignore it.
I agree that this entire industry could probably have a new discussion around notifications. But I'm interested in the idea that you don't think the current UX of like a stream.
It's not about it being enough. I think it might be too much.
I think
there's an opportunity here for Google to utilize machine learning, which is, you know.
Obviously, yes, that is the goal. That is what solves your issue of being annoyed by the notifications.
Yeah, a machine learning system that knows exactly which notifications to the granular level that I want to be receiving and that I actually interact. Like, I imagine a notification system that just gauges how I interact with notifications and just makes decisions on my behalf. And we're kind of like, it seems like we're kind of inching our way there, but it's just not there yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that in the next couple versions of Android.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about the notification shade, what is your opinion on the swipe direction? The one swipe direction.
That is kind of a cue from iOS, or the most recent version of iOS. I mean, I have the experience of using both Android and iOS, so I know that this is something that Google's actually taking from iOS. You know, on iOS, you swipe right to actually open the notification, and if you swipe left, it doesn't open. It just gives you a couple options to clear or manage whatever it is you're doing, or it actually pulls up an option to tap to view the notification. So, if you're coming from iOS to an Android device, then I guess this changed system in Q is actually going to be more familiar to you. I don't really feel strongly about it either way.
Yeah, it is. This change is truly like the lightning rod that was the first beta, but at the end of the day, there's so many ways Google can change it. They can let you set the direction you want, or I don't know, or bring back the two swipe direction. But yeah, personally, it's annoying and reveals just how much muscle memory I have attached to swiping notifications away in either direction. It's I find it odd as a both direction swiper. I find it odd not to have that anymore. But yeah, this could definitely change going forward.
I don't have any really strong feelings about it. I guess another thing, kind of on the UI UX front, is that, well, two things really. The system-wide dark theme is finally here with Android Q, which we've been talking about system-wide dark since what, Lollipop? I don't know. I think that it was Lollipop actually that Ron over at Ars, shout out to Ron, what's up? Might have been Lollipop, might have been N, I'm not sure, or M. That it was that he found, like the day it released, he found some hidden setting or developer setting somewhere deep. I think it might have just been a developer setting that was accidentally left in, and then like with the second beta or developer preview of M or L, I can't remember. One of those versions, it was there for the first one, and then it disappeared in the second one, and then the next year it was there for the first one, and then it disappeared with the second one. So we have this. I don't know, a history a little bit with dark mode in Android. And it looks like, and I guess this is also tied to the work we've been seeing happening with Material Theme, is it looks like it's actually happening this year. Because we've been seeing dark mode stuff appearing in these very all-white apps that Google's been releasing with the new version of Material. And it looks like Android Q will have a system-wide setting, and basically, as of this release, the only way that it can be enabled is by toggling the low power mode or the battery saver mode. Is that right? That's an interesting thing. Is
the battery saver mode?
Dark
yes.
mode toggle. It's just battery saver toggle. What do you think about that? Do you think that makes sense? Do you think that'll actually happen for the official release, or do you think that Google will separate this out as a dark mode thing?
I think it'll be separated as its own theme, as its own toggle, because there are surprisingly some people that don't like dark mode and enjoy the brightness of their apps. I know the current tech discussion right now is on how dark themes are just a fad. But yeah, I think by default, turning on the battery saver will darken your screen, because it's proven dark backgrounds are proven to save battery life. But for, as Android's usual customization choices, I think it'll be enabled by, users will have that will Android Q will eventually.
Yeah, this is a shot in the dark, but I completely disagree with you, and I think that it will be tied to the battery saver toggle in the actual production release of Android Q. The reason being, I think Google wants you to use their Google themed white themed Material Theme by default. Like, I think their aesthetic is a branding thing at this point, and I think the white. The brightness of all the apps is part of that. And I think that the argument for the dark mode is primarily a battery argument and secondarily a personal preference argument. Not to mention the fact that Google is moving away from catering to personal preferences, generally speaking. I guess the counter argument to that is that they're doing this weird theming thing in Android Q, but we'll talk about that in a second. I think that it'll be a battery saving feature. I think it'll be purely tied to battery saving. I think the way that it'll be pitched at I/O is we're adding a new, we're expanding battery save. I don't think it'll be advertised as we're adding dark mode to Android. I think it will be, we're expanding battery saver with dark mode.
I think Google wants to, the fact that Samsung, the biggest OEM, has a theming platform, I think Google wants to get this unified, as Google has been on the push to unify all these small niche features in the past few years. And I think theming is the biggest one for them to capture.
I don't see it. I don't really get this whole theming thing at all. I don't understand where what's the logical conclusion of this? Is the logical conclusion?
You can make Android work however you want it to.
Counter to what they've been doing with the, I guess, Pixel experience or whatever you want to call Google Android right now. I don't know. I think it's an easy feature
for users to like and point that this is different from iOS. So I think that this is an easy way to do that. Also, if it's tied to battery saver, I guarantee that so many people will enable it and end up not receiving notifications often enough in the background.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be a side effect. And I think that would discourage people from using it, which is, I think, not exactly counter to what Google would prefer. I think Google would prefer you not to use it, as evidenced by the fact that they've made all of their apps white intentionally. I don't know. That's just my feeling on it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. On the theming thing, as of now, it's deep in the developer options, and it basically lets you change the accent colors throughout the OS, the headline slash body font, and the icon shape between, you know, the squircle or the circle or the, I don't know what the other options are. But that's not really that much customization. That's very bare bones level of customizability, I think. And I don't understand really where this is going. And I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
It's choice. People like choice. I think that be together not the same if Google's still using that catchphrase, which I don't think they are. But it's just an easy win. Like, look at how Assistant is letting you choose your different eight different voices and coming soon celebrity voices. It's an easy way for Google to stand out and tell compared to iOS and just say, this is a platform that lets you customize how the way things look to match your personal preferences. It's table stakes.
I just don't think that the last few years have been going in that direction. I think the last few years have been Google making more and more of its own decisions about how things should look and how the design of the phone should be, taking away more and more customizability, tweaking kind of those kind of features, and making, I guess, kind of authoritative decisions about design and branding, and really have, I mean, they've doubled down on really telling a story with the Material theme and Google's branding in general across hardware and software and how those two go together. And there's a distinct Google brand now that did not exist before the last couple years. Before the last couple of years, there was a distinct Android brand that on Google's first-party products has been altogether replaced. And that's not just a matter of theming or customizability. It's Google is painting a picture of how its products should feel to the end user across every category. Do you see them ever allowing you to customize the interface of the Google Home Hub? I don't think that'll ever happen because they are designing a Google UX that is distinctly Google. And they want you to love the Google UX for the Google UX in the Google, like just because it is Google's, not because you get to customize it, if that makes sense. I don't know. I just think that if they do this, I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying if they do this, it seems to not be in line with everything they've been doing and the direction they've been moving for the last couple of years.
I have been loving Google taking an editorial stance towards how their product should work. But at the same time, So the future is machine learning. It's extreme personalization and customization. With that being said, I think having your devices being able to adapt to your preferences is a key distinction is a key argument that Google should be making, and that one that's going to only increase as we get these personalized AIs in the future, quote unquote, quote unquote. And these just these features that adapt to you, like notifications, being able to know which ones are important to you and which ones are not. I think it's all in that general family. I don't think Google is going to go wild and let you customize everything. But even something as simple as like an accent color is something that people are crazy about. They like having their OS just reflect their personality. And I think for Google, yes, go get a more editorial stance on how your products look and feel. But at the same time, there are easy, tiny things they can do to delight the end user.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm against this. I'm just saying that it seems out of character with what the direction they've been moving. I'm fine with it. I don't have any strong opposition to being able to change the color of the banner in the settings app. Like, it's fine. I don't care. But I just... It just doesn't, I don't know, it's not like, oh, obviously, yes, this Google will do this. It just seems like a little experiment that they're playing with and not necessarily something that will actually launch. I don't know, that's my gut. Anyways, we should move on. I think that pretty much covers it on Android Q. There's native screen recording, better location controls.
That's all the high-level features.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for now. We'll probably see more and more stuff on terms of the actual user-facing stuff in the next couple releases. I/O is just a couple months away. Also, this week, I had a little bit of a scoop. I got access, kind of, I guess, indirect or direct access, I guess I could say, to the Pixel 3a, which is, we now know, we actually have two sources who have confirmed that the Pixel 3a is actually going to be called the Pixel 3a. This is the device that Google has, well, not Google, but has been leaked, rumored for, what, 6 months now? If you want to go all the way back to the beginning of 2017, when I reported that there was a budget, not premium Pixel, then we can go back that far. This has been rumored for more than 2 years, to which I will remind everyone, Rick Osterloh came out immediately after that and said Pixel stays premium, which was a vague rebuttal to my report, which, whatever. But it looks like Pixel is not staying premium, at least not in the sense of the top end of the line premium, as it seems like this Pixel 3a is the equivalent of the iPhone XR or the Galaxy S10e of the Pixel line. I don't know. It didn't make sense to me for a while, and it still doesn't really make sense to me, but it doesn't make sense to me in the same sense that the XR and the S10e don't make sense to me. Which is to say that these are weirdly positioned devices with weird prices and weird compromises. That pretty much defines these three phones. Like the iPhone XR, for all intents and purposes, is like, I mean, it has the same top level processor. Some people even like the LCD display better, even though it's lower resolution. And, you know, like, it has just weird compromise, like no 3D touch on the, you know, iPhone XR. It's just weird compromises that have managed to bring the price down just a little bit. But it still kind of is offering the premium experience, but not quite. And meantime, offering weird, unique features and functionality that even the top end phone, doesn't have. So it's just weird. And so the 3A seems to be, well, one, what do you think about the name? Pretty bad.
Horrible. I hope it's not the real name. It's 3A. Putting an A at the end of something is so nerdy. It's like you're making a list and then adding sub-points. You're adding sub-points to the product line.
Yeah.
It's a nerd thing to do. It makes sense in Google's mentality, but I don't think it'll translate very well.
Yeah, but at the same time, the S10e and the 10R don't really... I mean, it's just a random letter, essentially, that's added to the end. Just to differentiate, this is not the... You know, it's just like, this is not but, the iPhone 10, it's the iPhone 10R. Just got to add that little letter at the end to just say this is not the one. It's a variant. It's the not so good one.
Apple has the advantage of being Apple and usually being good at branding. Google is not.
Not lately, man. Apple's been terrible at branding lately. Apple Pencil and Apple Pencil, both called Apple Pencil. They work with completely different devices.
Charging case and wireless charging case. They're with Google. Apple likes adding
that
with.
That pisses me off, things. Man. The charging case or wireless charging case and the charging case.
One, it shouldn't be optional.
It's terrible. It's been 2 years since the AirPods launched. The new ones should just come with the charging case and it should be the same price and it should just be the new ones.
Profit margin.
You shouldn't have two different SKUs for different kinds of charging. Imagine if Google released the Pixel 3 without wireless charging for $649 and with wireless charging for $749. Two different SKUs for just having wireless charging or not. That's ridiculous. Anyways, on the Pixel 3a, its weird compromises are that it doesn't have wireless charging. What are the other compromises? Let me think.
Primarily, it would be the camera. Well,
there's not two.
You should explain that.
There's not
once.
There's not two front-facing cameras. There is only one front-facing camera, and it is just the wide-angle one. And the back one is the same as the standard one. Interestingly, one of the things I reported this week, a lot of people assumed that this would be an LCD display, the same way the iPhone XR is an LCD display to cut costs or whatever. It turns out, as far as I can tell, so I've actually seen multiple photos of this device in the dark sitting right next to a Pixel 3 XL with both devices with the brightness all the way up, and there was no sign of any kind of light bleed on the Pixel 3a. So I concluded that this is an OLED based on that experiment, and traditionally with smartphones, that's been a pretty reliable experiment. If it's an LCD with a black screen, brightness all the way up in the dark, you're going to be able to see the brightness of the screen. In this case, we couldn't because OLED obviously can turn those pixels off. That's an interesting thing, that it's keeping that high-end screen, which would suggest that this device will definitely be mid-range and up. It won't be, like hoping that this was going to be like Google's like Hail Mary attempt to get Pixel devices in the wild and sell this thing for $299 or something.
No.
That's not happening for sure. What other interesting differentiators? It seems to also have the Pixel Visual Core. That's a question that I got a lot. The specs are fine. Actually has a slightly larger battery than the Pixel 3. That's really interesting. It's like another one of those weird, like this is actually better than the top phone in a very minor way. Like a very, very, very slightly larger battery at 3000 milliamp hours. 5.6 inch display on the smaller, 6 inches on the larger. Apparently both, well, I haven't seen the larger. I've only seen the smaller. The larger does not have a notch, as has been reported. I actually don't have any solid proof that the larger even exists. Well, yes, I do. Actually, I lied. I do have proof or evidence that the larger exists. As I mentioned, I have two sources that have corroborated this Pixel 3a name, and that primary source material also confirmed that there is a 3a XL. So, but I've not seen the 3a XL like in the flesh, and I don't have direct access to it the way I do with the 3a. What else? I mean, that is what it is. It seems like it'll probably be priced $100, maybe less than the Pixel 3, and David over at Android Police reported that it's launching sometime in the next couple months on Verizon. I don't know.
The story, like I've said before, the story around this phone is going to be fascinating. That mid-range to premium range. This is not going to be cheap. I think that's why we assume that. I really do not know the market this is targeting. At the end of the day, I think, like you've made the argument repeatedly that with the way people are buying phones these days monthly, they'll just get the bigger one, the nicer one. Like the feel of this phone is going to be fascinating. It's a plastic body. Then people in stores are going to handle that plastic body versus the nice glass, clean, smooth one of the regular Pixel 3. So it's how Google announces this, how Google positions this, is going to be much more fascinating than the device itself. Let's put it that way.
If I were to guess right now, based on what we know, I would guess that this will be a very quiet launch. It will be launched and it'll be sold in Verizon stores and only. That would be my guess. And
Google Store?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I would guess. I really don't know. But I would say that it will be quiet. Like, I don't think that Google is going to come out and splash this phone everywhere. I don't think it's going to be marketed the way the iPhone XR was and is. I would guess that this will be like a press release. I don't think there's going to be an event for it. I don't think that. I just think that there. You're talking about it'll be interesting to see the story. I don't think that there will be much of a story. I think that the story will be having a slightly cheaper Pixel available in Verizon stores.
The obvious story would have been it's available for international markets only, done. But this Verizon thing throws in a wrench that I think is hard to match up.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess another thing that I don't know, it's interesting because like I would say the smaller Pixel 3 is actually more in competition with the iPhone XR than this Pixel 3a would be, if that makes sense. Like, they're parallel, but honestly, the Pixel 3 is more of a direct competitor. Like, if someone's standing in a Verizon store and they're thinking, like, well, I don't want to spend $1,000. I would only want to spend, like, maybe $600 or $700. You know, I don't want a $35 a month payment. I want a $30 payment or a $25 payment. You know, they're standing there thinking, do I get the iPhone XR or do I get the Pixel 3? And it'll be interesting because this 3A will be priced below the Pixel 3, presumably, which will be, I don't know, it's lower than mid-range in the same sense that the iPhone XR is mid-range or the Galaxy S10e is mid-range. It's a little bit lower than that. It's kind of between low-range and mid-range, if that makes sense. And that puts it in a unique pricing category, I think. That's assuming it's priced as we think it will be, which we don't know. But anyways, that's Pixel 3a. Seems to be coming sometime in the next few months. We don't have any idea other than one report from David, although I can say pretty matter-of-factly that the Pixel 3a is the name and that it's real and that should be coming to the United States, but we'll see. Oh, yeah, another thing on that was, besides my two sources, which have confirmed the 3A name, we also saw in a kind of, I guess, teardown-ish thing of Android Q last week that there was actually, the name actually first appeared there, too. So we've got, I know of, three different sources that have corroborated this 3A name. So, yeah, terrible name, but that's what Google decided, apparently. Although I would like to highlight that apparently Google is hiring someone to lead its product naming efforts as of a few weeks ago. So maybe they'll help with that, with the Pixel 4a or 4r, whatever it ends up being called. Anyways, this is the part of the show that you've all been waiting for. We're going to talk about, what's it called? I can't remember because it's such a terrible name, Stadia. I personally, on the name front, it's like, maybe it's just because it's new, but every time I think, what's that product called? Like, every time I want to talk about it, I have to think in my head, like, intentionally, what was that product called? And then in my head, I have to think stadium. And then I have, because, you know, stadium, like sports, gaming, stadium. And then I have to think Stadia from there. Like, that's the many hoops that my brain has to, like, jump through before I can remember that name. What about you? Do you like the name? I think you mentioned yesterday,
does not seem googly.
I agree.
One, the name, the actual name itself, and the fact that it isn't an actual word. And two, the actual font and logo used to describe it looks very not friendly, not googly, which you made the point of that the market that Google is targeting is this gamer market.
Yeah, they're targeting people who buy Razer keyboards and, you know, Glow mice and whatever. Like, I think they have to at least a little bit cater to this gaming aesthetic. And so it's not surprising to see that the Stadia logo is not Google Sans. You know, like, they had to make it they had to make it a little bit edgy to cater to this market, I think.
I'm now thinking about the Google Sans version of that.
We could actually make it. We'll tweet it out after the show. It's pretty funny. But yeah, so you correctly, I was wrong. I will admit it. I went on the record a couple days ago saying, I don't think that that's an S. I think it's supposed to resemble Wi-Fi or something like that. And you were like, no, it's an S. And you were right. And I will openly admit that I was wrong on my analysis of the meaning of the logo. But for those that don't know, before we talk more about this, Stadia is Google's new game streaming service. Well, I don't know if we can call it a game streaming service. It's a game streaming platform. And it is basically on live from like 10 years ago, rebooted, and possibly done right. We'll see.
Yes.
We will see, because the technology has changed. Things have changed. Things have progressed. There have been gaming streaming services and platforms like this in the past. So the idea, and I guess the core technology of streaming a game over the internet, is not new, but some things are new. I don't know if Google did a great job of really highlighting those things, yesterday. I think they did an okay job, but I think they could have done better. And basically this will be able to stream AAA titles to any device. That was kind of the pitch. And that's also kind of true of OnLive and other previous services we've seen, which was basically, you'll be able to, they showed Doom, I think, or Assassin's Creed, one of those two, being played on a variety of devices. They showed it being played on a Pixel phone. They showed it being played on a Pixel Slate, a low-end PC. They said on stage, we tried to find the crappiest PC we could find. I'm assuming they made sure that the Wi-Fi chip in that crappy PC was like, didn't have any latency issues or anything, you know, like, anyways, Pixelbook, and a TV via the Chromecast Ultra.
Yes.
And I guess besides just showing it on the variety of the devices, the cool thing that they showed on stage in the very brief demo was that they were able to seamlessly switch between them. So the game was playing in live time and they were able to just click a button and on the Stadia controller, which we'll talk about in a second, and switch from playing on the, you know, Pixel Slate to the Chromecast in a split second, able to, you know, just pick up where you left off. Pretty cool. It'd be pretty cool to be sitting at home on the couch playing a game and then be able to just tap a button and be able to switch to playing it on your phone. I mean, it's a fascinating and cool idea. And then, you know, I don't know. It's cool. But what's your take? What's your thoughts? Initial thoughts?
I think actually I have a minor take first. What really surprised me about Stadia was the URL-based nature of it, how any link can bring you into a game, how any click of a button on YouTube. Google obviously loves the web. Well, they say they love the web. And this commitment to having, well, it's not exactly readable. The Stadia URL will probably not be readable to end users. But still, it's very cool. Like, the conceptually, you can click a link and then it opens a game. That should be something that they push going forward, because I think that is a very cool aspect of that. Anyway, Stadia is in terms of a service, I think most people are average gamers. They like their puzzles, they like their Angry Birds, they like their hit wonder, Flappy Bird, was it? Goes on for quite a while. But I think even though most people are average gamers, they're enough that once they get a taste of like real mobile gaming, of mobile gaming that pushes the extent of your phone or tablet, they will want to go, they will want to take another step to real AAA console gaming. And I think that's the market Google is going after. In terms of, it's not, Google's main push was that the hardware you have shouldn't be a limiting factor. But I think the bigger push is the content they're making available. This, if they get these high-end titles of games, if they can get all those deals and they push it to users, I think that's going to be the real factor. Because gaming consoles, the Xbox is, I think, $250. They're only going to go down. They're only going to get cheaper. So I think the biggest sell is right now the content versus rather than the cost of the service or buying the hardware and necessary games for that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a unique aspect of this. And there's so many, there's just so many different layers of this to talk about. I mean, one layer is, you know, like, how are developers going to feel about this? And one of those things is like, you know, people will be able to buy AAA titles from basically anywhere now. You know, it's like, yes. Right now, you can only buy AAA titles if you go to Steam or if you go to Origin or if you go to GameStop. You know, it's like, those are your three outlets, basically. And with this, it's like, you can buy a AAA title on the Play Store, basically, through the Stadia app, you know, or you can buy a AAA title when you're sitting on, you know, YouTube gaming, watching, like, I can see how that could be attractive to AAA titles. You know, someone can be not even that much of a gamer themselves, but they can be, you know, watching a viral video from a popular AAA title and be able to make one click to sign up for Stadia or buy the game and play it. And even another layer of that is jump into the game right where the video is. Like, that's a potential opportunity too. You know, like, they can jump into playing the game right where the video is currently showing the game. Which, you know, that's like, there's just this like whole world given Google's existing infrastructure with YouTube, there's this whole world of opportunity in terms of integrations and stuff. Not to forget the fact that Google Plus's integration with YouTube didn't go so well. So that's just a sidebar. But yeah, I mean, that's what's exciting to me personally, as someone who's not a gamer. I don't own an Xbox or a PlayStation. I don't really play AAA titles. I have a Switch, and I occasionally play those Nintendo AAA titles. But I don't play AAA titles other than that. And so for me personally, I would be attracted to this idea of, you know, being able to sign up for a $10 a month if it did end up going the Netflix style route, which there's doubts about that. But, you know, if it did go that route, signing up for this and being able to make one just click into any game at any time. But that's, I mean, done right, that's an attractive offer for me. And
I think one interesting sell is going to be demos, when people can demo the game before buying, whether it's one small level or like 10 minutes into the game. That is going to be a crazy sell, in that a crazy opportunity to get people to be hooked onto gaming.
Yeah.
Console gaming.
It's really interesting to see how Google's really appealing to every little category of the gaming community. Like, in one sense, you know, they're appealing to developers, because they're like, yeah, you can sell your AAA title from any device, any smartphone, anywhere. That's like, you know, potential customers that they didn't have access to before. And they're also appealing to streamers. You know, like, one of the big like benefits of doing or playing games on Stadia as a streamer, that, you know, current streaming systems are up like platforms don't offer, is that Google would literally be able to stream the game via Stadia to you as you're playing it and stream it to YouTube at the same time, because this is all Google's infrastructure. So, I mean, the game streaming, you know, world on YouTube is huge. And streamers will be able to stream games seamlessly with the tap of a button, which is something that is not as easy as of right now. So, you know, they're appealing to those. They're appealing to, I think, like you mentioned, like, they're appealing to kind of the casual gamer who maybe only plays Angry Birds but doesn't know that they could just buy a controller and attach their phone to it and be able to play this whole world of games. Like, It seems like they're really also appealing to these hardcore gamers by, you know, I don't know how real these numbers will end up being, but they're, you know, they're touting these crazy 4K at 60 FPS numbers and, you know, eventually 8K. And, you know, some tests have already shown that the input latency for this system is in the range of being comparable to just playing it on an Xbox. So anyways, they're really going after every subset of the market. And it says something, I think, for me as someone, a non-gamer, and I think you too, that this is a compelling product.
Yes. So the GDC announcement was for developers. They want to gauge interest. They want to show off the technical aspects, all that kind of stuff. Google put out the summer date for when this will be actually available. During the summer, they'll announce initial launch titles and hopefully a pricing model, which, speaking of which, we don't know how this is going to be priced. I know some people, early reports said this is a Netflix for games, with the implication that you pay one monthly fee and you get everything on there. But from the presentation with the idea, it seems that it's going to be a conventional, you still buy a game, you own a game. Which, these games are still like $60. That's the second hurdle that Google has to get over. I guess the fact that you're only spending $60 and you don't have to buy $250 of hardware on top of that might be enough to get average people there. But at the same time, people hate buying apps already.
Yeah, the pricing front, there is a little bit of precedence for this in the industry. If Google was to do an unlimited access kind of model, like a Netflix style model, I mean, there's not any direct kind of examples, but you could think of a service like PlayStation Now, which is, it's not a streaming service like Stadia, but you do have access to 700, I think, like AAA titles. That you can download at any given time. Like, you can just download them and play them. Most of them, I think, you can just download and play them. And it's $20 a month. And that's actually right around the price point that I would guess if Google was to do a Netflix-style streaming service with this. I think that $20 or $25 a month would be right there in that sweet spot. So I don't think that the AAA publishers would be just altogether opposed to the idea of, you know, allowing their games to be distributed that way. I think right now the biggest problem that Google has, well, we can actually, let's go into what are the problems with Stadia. I've got two, maybe you have more. One, there are just no games right now, pretty much. It looks like there's like a few games that have been made and optimized to actually run well on Stadia. Although it looks like Google's partnering with all the biggest technologies and companies that will allow development of games. So that's good news. But right now, it looks like the adoption is like slim to none. But I guess that makes sense considering this was very, very under wraps until just yesterday. And it seems like their announcement at GDC was very much to attract, interest. Cool.
Yeah.
That's number one problem, which I don't, I think that is going back to the beginning of gaming, all the way back to the original Nintendo console or whatever, even before then. A gaming console or a new gaming platform is made or broken by the games. It has to be a positive feedback loop. The console has to get adoption, the platform has to get adoption, and then when adoption is seen, then more publishers will jump on board. When more publishers jump on board, then the console will sell better. So it's like a positive feedback loop that Google is going to have to find its way into. Which that's yet to be seen. We don't know if that's going to happen. Is this Stadia going to kind of stagnate? Are there going to be like 30 games and Google never really catches any traction? One thing they're doing to kind of help that along is they've got their own first party game studio, which that's huge.
Which is fascinating.
That's huge news by itself. So that's my first thing. Maybe you have more. Number two, this is all I can think of right now, is that the internet connections in the United States is the major bottleneck. The bare minimum to use Stadia at the lowest kind of acceptable to Google level is 15 megabits per second up and down, I think. And the average internet connection in the United States is right there. So that means 50% roughly, maybe a little less, 50% of the United States could not even use this given their current interaction or their current internet connection. So that's not good news for Google. But as some have pointed out, I'll just give David over at AP a shout out, that it seems to be the timing of this announcement seems to be right alongside 5G, and the advent of 5G will definitely help move that along. And other things will help move that along. Ongoing adoption of fiber is getting better, and you know, et cetera. But
yeah.
Those are my big two concerns. Do you have any more besides those?
Again, my main focus is the bandwidth connection, both speaking personally, as somebody that does not get 15.
You can barely stream right now.
It's quite horrible. DSL is garbage.
And also, we have to point out, where do you live?
Los Angeles.
You live in a huge metroplex, and you can barely stream video on Google Hangouts, which is unfortunate.
Garbage, yes. But yeah, but I guess the biggest counter argument to that is 5G is going to make a difference, and betting against technology, against the rollout of connectivity, doesn't age well. Like, there were so many people in the early days that said, you can't possibly be stream 4K content to people. Why are you even doing that? Why are these screens getting better? Why are people making 4K content? But slowly and surely, that's becoming available. And I think that progress will be there. That it will be slow, and that initially some people will be excluded. But I think eventually we'll get there. So I don't think that's the biggest issue in the grand scheme of Stadia, like given a long-term time scale.
But sure.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I think about the internet, you know, / bandwidth issue in the context of, you know, how many startups have launched, or companies, tech companies, have launched products, but just at the wrong time. Like, a lot of people are drawing connections to OnLive, but OnLive launched 10 years ago, and at that point, you know, how many internet connections could really you know, pull it off? Far fewer than even today. And so, I mean, I think about how many tablets launched before the iPad, you know, or I don't know. You know, it's like timing is definitely a very significant aspect here. And I think that Google has the timing better than anyone before them, obviously, because, you know, internet connections and bandwidth is getting better, and 5G is literally on the cusp. So I don't know. I'm optimistic, just like you.
Yes, you know, technology progresses and streaming will be a major way people take advantage of that.
Yeah, in terms of availability of this, we really don't know. I mean, it was announced yesterday, but Google said very vaguely 2019, which could mean December 31st for all we know, and it could just be December 31st on one device. I don't know.
Yeah, it's more. They said more details by the summer, so I think E3 lines up. I think Google I/O is way too early for that, so E3 is the most likely candidate. But in terms of actual launch, it's my gut feeling is before the Made by Google event. I think they're stretching out way too far if we don't get this by October, before October rather.
My bet is that we'll see games at E3, because Google really needs to make a splash with games at E3 in one way or another with this in connection to this. It would be fascinating if Google had a real presence at E3, even if it wasn't huge, and if their first-party studio has been working on something in the background for a year or two, it would be really... I mean, wouldn't that be fascinating and awesome if Google's first-party game studio announced their first title?
They had a...
Even a teaser.
If they, Oh, if they had a good one.
Yeah.
If they had like a breakout, like Breath of the Wild, that's ambitious.
Oh, but that's another thing.
Imagine.
Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Just imagine if Google, if their creative studios could be the hit reason that Stadia sells well, and that would be a platform exclusive that you have to have use, you have to sign up, you have to use Stadia for.
Yeah.
That could be game changer.
That was one thing that Google highlighted at the event, was that there are some aspects of gaming that have not been possible because of limitations of hardware up until now. And if Stadia, given a lot of variables that work out, given a lot of things go right, Stadia does enable a lot of experiences, gaming experiences that haven't been possible before. I mean, I think about, you know, there's reasons why you can't do, for instance, I just use this example because I think it's funny. You can't play Elder Scrolls Skyrim split screen on a console because the console can't process and compute all those graphics for two independent players in a Skyrim world at the same time. There's physical limitations to that. And this is a just, you know, a funny example because Skyrim seems to make an appearance at every single E3 for the last 5 years. But, you know, if imagine a Skyrim that could be played, you know, in a kind of split screen because it's on Stadia. And on Stadia, it doesn't have the limitations of physical hardware, and it can just be two Stadia instances basically doing those doing the work, and you could have true splits. And they kind of demoed one game. They showed it off. It was kind of an internal experiment, I think, where they were showing, you know, like, you know, a split screen game that was like five players, and you know, they all were in this huge 3D world together, and it's the kind of game that wouldn't be possible on a traditional console. And so, yeah, I mean, at E3, it'd be awesome if Google came out and showed something unique and made a splash, because that might be what makes or breaks the console, just like Nintendo, you know. Like that's what keeps Nintendo alive, is that all of their first party titles
are exclusive
to Nintendo consoles. Most of them are really, really good. So, you know, it's like,
so the thing with Stadia that I'm wondering is Google can't cancel this. Even if it's hugely unsuccessful, like for the first year, they have to keep throwing resources at it because they've already invested so much. They have a first party content studio, but more importantly, the streaming technology, these GPUs they built, they're out there in the world. They cannot walk back from that. They can't just scrap it. Yeah. Maybe they can repurpose it.
I mean, I think that's a little naive to say, considering some of the things that Google's walked back after millions and millions of dollars of investment. I mean, I think of Google. I think of Google Glass, which is like hundreds of millions of dollars in marketing budget and development and an R&D. And you know, it's like that was pretty much not walked back. But it, you know, a lot of times when Google cancels something, it's like, they're not canceling it. They're going to learn a lot. They benefit from the technology, what they've learned, and they're going to throw it into something else, you know? And so if they did cancel Stadia, I don't think, you know, so quote unquote cancel, I don't think that means that this technology or this idea is dead. I think when Google launches a product, they're saying, even if this version of it doesn't work out, it will be good that we invested in this and it will pay off later no matter what. And that's the case with Google Glass, and that's the case with the Nexus phones, and that's the case with, you know, countless, even Google Duo might turn out that way. and so, yeah, I you're right that Google can't cancel it in the sense that they can't just give up, because you're right, they have invested tons in this. And not just physical hardware, but, you know, R&D, and they seem to really, really, really be signing on for the long haul with this. But at the same time, yes, this iteration of it could burn out, you know, and Google could use those server farms in some other way. So,
yep.
Google's just an ever-evolving beast. Anyways, this is all our just first thoughts on Stadia. We're probably going to have much more in the coming months and weeks. Probably won't learn any much new until E3, hopefully, even if we even hear anything at E3, we don't know. Initial thoughts. Might be talking more about it next week if more tidbits and little details roll out. We'll see. I think that's the show. I think that's good. We covered a lot.
Indeed.
All right. Well, until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday afternoon and publish on Thursday mornings. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms. such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Play, and you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks to Admir for joining me, and we'll see you next week.